From Pacifica Reporters Against Censorship, this is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, October 28, 2003. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez. A big week for environmentalists on Capitol Hill. Today, the Senate overwhelmingly approved the nomination of Utah Governor Mike Leavitt to head the EPA. Protests reached the doorstep of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld demanding he be fired for what protesters call his role in starting and continuing the Iraq War. And in part two of our special series, Global Power Exposed, we look at the global assault on civil liberties. Today, we go to Argentina. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Electronics giant Sony unveiled plans today to slash its worldwide workforce by 13% over the next 3 years, targeting thousands of workers in wealthier nations while maintaining production in countries with weak labor and environmental laws. John Hamilton with the Workers' Independent News Service has more.
The cuts will target 20,000 of Sony's 150,000 employees worldwide. The company's line of cathode ray televisions, long a mainstay of its success, will no longer be produced in Japan, where 7,000 workers will lose their jobs. So far, Sony officials won't say where the 13,000 other layoffs will occur, though they have indicated that no jobs will be lost from its Chinese division. Mike Prokosh is with the Globalization Program of United for a Fair Economy. He says Sony's cuts will continue the exit of manufacturing jobs to lower-paying countries.
Whose workforce will work the cheapest, which countries will allow them to pollute the most and impose the fewest environmental costs on them, which countries will give them the biggest tax breaks and tax holidays, which countries will repress their own labor movements the most, and the winner, hands down, in many of these categories is China.
Sony's restructuring plan calls for China to become its new manufacturing center in Asia. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm John Hamilton for Free Speech Radio News.
A United Nations report is expected to keep hidden some of the financial dealings of multinational corporations and provisional government officials in the Congo, claiming it may weaken the tentative political situation. Heather Risby has more from the UN.
A number of international non-governmental organizations are demanding that the United Nations Security Council must order a probe against companies that are believed to have made huge profits from the conflict in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The final report on Congo, established by an independent panel of experts in June 2000, is likely to be discussed by the Security Council on Thursday, but NGOs say they are not sure if the council would be looking into why and how many multinational corporations were allowed to exploit that country's natural resources. Last year, the panel found out that as many as 85 companies, many of them based in the West, were involved in business activities that had clear links with the war in Congo. NGOs say, instead of investigating the companies, many Western governments have pressured the panel to remove the names of the companies involved. When asked, a UN spokesman refused to comment, saying it is up to the Security Council to decide. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Heather Rizvi at the United Nations.
Nigerian Muslims and the World Health Organization are embroiled in a controversy over the safety of an immunization exercise aimed at curbing the spread of the viral infection polio in West and Central Africa. Sam Olakoye reports from Lagos.
Leading Islamic clerics and Muslim health workers say the vaccines are contaminated with viruses that can cause sterility and terminal ailments like AIDS and cancer. They said this is part of a U.S. plan to limit Nigeria's population. Claims that the WHO had used dangerous drugs on the populace in the past, and a drug test by the U.S. pharmaceutical company Pfizer, which left more than 200 children either dead or paralyzed 7 years ago, have not helped matters. But the WHO says it is essential to carry out the immunization in northern Nigeria because the polio outbreak is spreading from the area. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos, Nigeria.
The NAACP finds little racial diversity in the television and film industries, both in front of and behind the cameras. Craig Murphy reports from D.C.
NAACP President Kwesi Mfume said that people of color are still underrepresented in production and other off-screen roles within the television industry. While racial diversity has improved for on-screen roles, news programming and especially cable news shows have shown very little progress as news anchors, guests, reporters, and experts remain overwhelmingly white. And although news shows have demonstrated the least progress of all television programming, the movie industry has shown even less. Mfume believes that the lack of diversity may be caused by standard business practices and traditions within the industry.
While not as blatant as overt racism, in the long term, it still has the same effect of denying equal opportunity, or at least impeding its progress.
For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Craig Murphy.
And I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
Today, the Senate overwhelmingly approved the nomination of Utah Governor Mike Leavitt to head the Environmental Protection Agency. Environmentalists opposed the nomination, charging Leavitt with looking the other way when, as Utah governor, corporations broke state and federal pollution laws. Supporters say environmentalists misrepresent Leavitt's environmental record, and they say Leavitt will protect the environment without damaging the economy with regulations. Meanwhile, besides the Leavitt nomination, the Senate will also likely vote this week on a measure to reduce greenhouse gases and on President Bush's Healthy Forest Initiative. Mitch Jeserich has more from Capitol Hill.
On this vote, the ayes are 88, the noes are 8. The confirmation is adopted.
After weeks of contentious debate, Republican and Democrat lawmakers alike approved the nomination of Utah Governor Mike Leavitt to head the Environmental Protection Agency. Senator Barbara Boxer of California was one of only 8 Democrats in the Senate to vote against his nomination.
We need an EPA administrator with guts and strength and the ability to stand up and say he's going to fight for the environment. The fact that he did not answer a number of my questions tells me that I am afraid that in the room when they're debating these issues, that Mike Leavitt will be a full team player with the Bush administration and not a team player for the health of the American people.
Mike Leavitt has been the Republican governor of Utah for the last decade. During his nomination hearings, Leavitt said his governing philosophy is characterized by the Latin term in Libra, which means balance. Leavitt and his supporters say as the top EPA administrator, he could protect the environment without burdening business with regulations. Environmentalists accuse Leavitt of sacrificing wild public land to oil drilling and building highways through protected wetlands during his career.
I think that some of my colleagues and many in the environmental community have been a little too fast and too loose with pinning that unhelpful label of polluter on others and on the industries that keep our society running.
Speaking on the Senate floor, Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah denied accusations that Utah has one of the worst records for water protection enforcement in the nation. Hatch praised the state of Utah as one of the cleanest in the country.
There was a report put out by the environmental group that states this falsehood. However, the statement was based on incomplete reporting of water quality data from Utah. In an analysis of the complete data, the EPA has, in fact, determined that Utah ranks among the top 10 states in water quality compliance.
Several Democratic senators had threatened to filibuster the nomination of Leavitt. But with 88 of the 100 senators voting in favor of the nomination, a strong majority of the Democrats sided with the Republicans. Becky Stanfield is with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, also known as U.S. PIRD.
Well, obviously we're very disappointed. You know, he has a terrible record of environmental enforcement in the state of Utah. And my opinion is that he will simply rubber stamp the Bush administration's attack on our environmental protections.
The EPA administrator is not part of the president's cabinet. Basically, the EPA administrator promotes the president's environmental policies and oversees the EPA, which enforces environmental protection laws. But Joan Mulhern with Earth Justice says the EPA was meant to be an independent agency to protect the people.
The EPA was created in 1970 under President Nixon to be an independent agency. The Congress and the President at the time decided that the American people deserved to have an independent voice, that whose job it was to stand up for environmental protection, and that's how the EPA was created. And I'm very concerned that Governor Leavitt will not be that independent voice for the environment. His record indicates that he will not.
Once taking over at the EPA, Leavitt will have his hands full with lawsuits directed at the agency. On Tuesday, U.S. PERG and other groups filed a suit against the EPA for recent rule changes that weaken the Clean Air Act. U.S. PERG says such rollbacks increase the likelihood of children developing asthma. Environmentalists are supportive of a bill expected to be voted on this week to reduce carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. It is sponsored by Republican Senator John McCain and Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman. The word on Capitol Hill, however, is that the measure is likely to fail. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein of California says she plans to bring the Bush administration's Healthy Forest Initiative to the Senate floor for a vote this week. Healthy Forest Initiative will allow for more logging in U.S. forests. Senator Feinstein says the devastating fires in Southern California is proof that such a bill is needed so to ward off forest fires. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jezerich in Washington.
On the heels of the CAFTA meetings in Houston last week, U.S. trade representatives are preparing for the upcoming FTAA, or Free Trade Area of the Americas, meetings in Miami. And to avoid a repeat of the failed WTO meetings in Cancun, Argentina and the U.S. have agreed to pre-FTAA meetings in Argentina this November 4. Meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., student leaders from around the country went to Capitol Hill yesterday to lobby for the rights of poor farmers and workers and against the Free Trade Area of the Americas. Avishai Artsy has more from D.C.
Donning a white and green t-shirt with the words Make Trade Fair emblazoned on the front, George Washington University junior Lena Musayev described the plight of small farmers in Latin America at a student fair trade conference in Washington, D.C. this weekend. But Musayev is somewhat of an anomaly. As a young Republican and an immigrant from the former Soviet Republic of Azerbaijan, the 21-year-old resembles the new face of student organizing around globalization issues.
I'm actually a Republican, but I don't see fair trade as I see it as a bipartisan issue. I will definitely be focusing on the message that our own sovereignty is at hand. It's a concern. Large corporations can sue governments. I don't think that should be happening. Also, illegal immigration is going up in the U.S., and I feel like a lot of conservatives really don't want that to happen, so I'll bring that message across. And as well as farmers are switching to cocaine farms, and that's an increase in drug trading. So that's, again, Republicans don't feel like that's good for the country.
Musayev is the founder of United Students for Fair Trade, which, along with Oxfam America and Global Justice, hosted the Make Trade Fair student conference this weekend against the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or the FTAA. The proposed FTAA is an expansion of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, to Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. Nearly 200 student leaders from 65 campuses in 30 states came to Washington, D.C. and participated in a series of workshops to build skills in media advocacy and organizing. The conference ended on Monday with a day of lobbying. 50 students descended on Capitol Hill to ask their elected representatives to vote fair trade. Last year, when Congress approved fast-track legislation by a narrow margin of 3 votes, it handed over trade negotiating authority to the White House. Jen Brandt, a trade policy advisor for Oxfam America, talks about upcoming votes in Congress.
CAFTA is going to come before Congress for a vote probably early next year. We're urging congressmen to say no, and the students will be also talking to their congressmen about the FTAA.
Monday's lobbying kicked off a National Student Week of Action to stop the FTAA. Veronica Crespin, a junior at the University of Colorado in Boulder, says U.S. corn dumping was what caused members of her family to move from Mexico to the United States.
I have family who has had to immigrate here from Mexico because of the direct effects from NAFTA. Because of the poor economy, they've had to come up here, try to find work, and make a life for themselves here because they couldn't in Mexico.
Judah Moore is a sophomore at Berea College in Kentucky. He has been leading a group of 50 students in a statewide campaign against the FTAA.
I'm originally from West Africa, so I have personally seen the effects of industrialized nations dumping their products on the markets of poor African countries and a deep poverty that results from that. And so I have personal stakes in this, and that's why I'm so passionate about stopping the free trade area of the Americas, because I know the same effects that it continues to have on people in West Africa is going to have on people in Latin America and the Caribbean.
According to Michelle Dixon, the student coordinator on Oxfam America's trade campaign, the Make Trade Fair conference is the beginning of an extended student lobbying campaign against free trade legislation.
This is about students organizing at a grassroots level to show that what we're going to prioritize is our values, our belief in a world that can be better than this. Trying to coordinate, to do concrete specific things like National Lobby Days, to really, you know, make sure we build relationships with our representatives, so in 2005, when the FTAA comes to vote, they know that we're going to hold them accountable in elections.
Student organizers are gearing up for the next big battle against free trade, the Miami Ministerial of the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or the FTAA, from November 20th to 21st. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Avishai Artsy. Thanks to Selena Musuda for help on this report.
Last Saturday, thousands rallied in Washington, D.C. and San Francisco, calling for an end to the occupation of Iraq. But on Sunday, people in Taos, New Mexico, focused on a problem that they say lives in their backyard, their neighbor, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. At one of two properties he owns in Taos, about 200 people rallied to demand he be fired for his role in starting and continuing the Iraq conflict. Catalina Reyes was there, and she has this report.
Hey, hey, ho, ho, Donald Rumsfeld had to go.
Rumsfeld owns two Taos properties, and both have been the scene of anti-war rallies. During other demonstrations, neighbors of the house he sometimes occupies have blocked the street leading to it, saying it's a private road. But the defense secretary's other property is on a county path bordering Taos Pueblo Indian Reservation, and that's where Taosanos, complete with protest signs and a few Halloween costumes, turned out Sunday. Beth Ensign was carrying, well, the kitchen sink.
I'm portraying a kitchen sink with a little pith helmet with a faucet and taps on it. And it's full of dirty dishes and the names of corporations such as Halliburton and Bechtel and the Carlyle Group that are responsible for the wonderful foreign policy that we're suffering with right now.
Ensign says she feels she's part of a groundswell of people realizing the government has lied to them about Iraq. She says firing Rumsfeld is a first step.
The whole administration needs to go.
We're surrounded by mountains and a field with sort of scattered trees and a cow. So how important is your body being out here? I mean, does it make a freaking difference or what?
We couldn't go to Washington. We've got kids and jobs and don't have the money to go for the big demonstrations out east, but we can do it here.
Among states, New Mexico has the second highest number of people uninsured, and a quarter of its children live in poverty. Blue-collar sectors like manufacturing and mining have been hardest hit during the military escalation of the last 2 years. Home foreclosures are at a record high, and 13% more people are on food stamps now than this time last year. Mark Goldman of nearby Arroyo Seco complains the media is not covering such local impacts of U.S. war policy.
You know, I'm the builder up here, and we're getting screwed. Now we're finding out that the construction materials, the plywood stuff, it's more than doubled in cost because there's train loads of plywood that are being purchased at high prices to go to Iraq to make military barracks and stuff, and that the suppliers are jacking up the prices. New Mexico has lower than average income but higher than average housing costs, and now the housing costs are being ratcheted up even higher by the Iraq war.
It's hard to say how much of the town of 4700 agrees Rumsfeld should be ousted. Taos Mayor Bobby Duran has said only a small group of malcontents protests, and most Taosenos are proud of Rumsfeld. Carol, who didn't want to give her last name, lives a stone's throw up the road.
I think it's very wrong for people to go to people's houses, because yelling at a house with nobody in it is just like, like, what up with that?
A national-level guest did speak to the gathering from the bed of an old gray pickup parked next to Rumsfeld's driveway. Washington, D.C.-based Ray McGovern is a 27-year veteran CIA analyst who used to meet daily with George Bush Sr. for intelligence briefings. With 32 other CIA and FBI employees, he's a member of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for insanity. McGovern says much of the intelligence community feels betrayed because they're watching intelligence being cooked to satisfy the administration's war architects. Under the eye of state policemen and plainclothesmen on Rumsfeld's side of a cattle grate, McGovern spoke to the absent secretary.
You and your arrogant colleagues deliberately lied to our elected representatives to start an unprovoked war. So after you've been fired, Mr. Rumsfeld, don't even think about coming back here. Unless you confess and repent.
A representative from Rumsfeld's office said the secretary couldn't comment before deadline. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Catalina Reyes in Taos, New Mexico.
After the FCC recently seized broadcasting equipment from low-power FM radio station San Francisco Liberation Radio, across the country in Vermont, another battle over a small radio station rages. Radio Free Brattleboro is forging a strong base of support, and a resolution in support of Radio Free Brattleboro states that the airwaves belong to the public and urges the Vermont legislature and the U.S. Congress to change the law governing radio broadcasting. It also asks for the authority to broadcast despite the fact that the 10-watt volunteer-run station lacks an FCC broadcasting license. Meanwhile, this past weekend, a new community radio station was born in Spokane, Washington. KYRS, called Thin Air Radio, has been waiting for 3 years to get on the air. Peter Graff and Dante Toza report from Spokane.
What is more pleasant than when brothers sit together? Those are lyrics sung by Jessica Skelatalia from the Black Cat Orchestra as part of the celebration to welcome the start of KYRS, Thin Air Radio, a new low-power FM station in Spokane, Washington. Local citizens and media activists from around the country participated in this so-called radio barn raising, a weekend-long group effort to raise the antenna and begin broadcasting.
My name's Jake and I'm an engineer from Austin, but right now I'm moving this telephone patch down.
My name is Amy Dalton. I'm from Philadelphia and I'm here to absorb the exciting wonderfulness of Thin Air Radio.
My name is Amishan Ta, and I'm from Seattle, and I came out here to help build the station.
KYRS, a 100-watt low-power FM station located in downtown Spokane, has been 3 years in the making. Station coordinator Lupito Flores explains.
Well, I think it was 1999 I first heard that the FCC was going to be opening up the FM dial to nonprofit, non-commercial community stations, the low-powered FM stations. And so I started trying to get some activists together in Spokane, got them together and started monthly meetings, and we've been meeting ever since.
In 2000, in response to continual pressure from media activists, the Federal Communications Commission began accepting applications for low-power FM stations in certain radio markets. The application process is difficult and is often a deterrent to community groups hoping to start their own station. The Philadelphia-based Prometheus Radio Project assists groups like Thin Air Community Radio in seeing their LPFM station become a reality.
Prometheus helps to start radio stations around the country, both by advocating for them and trying to win more frequencies for community groups that want to start stations, and we also just help build them.
Pete Treatish of Prometheus explains why they traveled over 3,000 miles to help bring KYRS on the air.
It seems like a lot of people in Spokane often feel isolated by the conservative political climate that's created by the relatively small number of owners of media here in town.
Lupito Flores details the situation in Spokane.
We have 6 Clear Channel stations, 7 Citadel stations. One family owns the only newspaper in town and a TV station. So the media is really mainstream, really biased, and there's a big, diverse population in Spokane, lots of different ethnic groups, but you'd never know that in the mainstream media.
After 3 years of patience and a weekend of hard work, KYRS Spokane Community Radio was officially on the air.
I'm Lupito Flores, the station coordinator of KYRS Spokane 95.3. I'd like to officially launch the first broadcast of Thin Air Community Radio.
Next, Prometheus Radio Project will go to Florida this coming December to help the coalition of Immokalee workers, tomato pickers exploited by Taco Bell, to build their own radio station. For FSRN, reporting from Spokane, Washington, this is Peter Graff in collaboration with Dante Toza.
The 26th of every month in Argentina is recognized as the day that Dario and Maxi, two activists in the unemployed movement, were killed by police during a Picatero march. Police repression in Argentina continues to be a problem for the workers' movement, which has gained worldwide recognition since the economic collapse in December 2001. The economic crisis left a quarter of the population unemployed and increased dramatically those living in poverty to 18 million, approximately half the population. This is over the past weeks, national daily newspapers have been reporting that the government is taking a firm position against social protest, opening criminal cases against members of the unemployed movement. Pauline Bartolone and Tomas Ilashev have this second report of our special series, Global Power Exposed, from Buenos Aires.
On December 20th, 2001, the Madres of Plaza de Mayo were stampeded by police on horses during the social uprising following Argentina's economic collapse. The Madres have been seeking justice for their disappeared sons and daughters since the country's military dictatorship, and say that repression of social movements in Argentina remains strong since the default of 2001. Bel Percini has been with the Mothers since 1976.
Bueno, las Madres desgraciadamente sabemos mucho de la represión.
Unfortunately, the Madres know repression very well. We have always said that the police are assassins. Repression has not just been under the military dictatorship. Really, this is an economic issue because people are sick and tired of not having jobs, of dying of hunger, of having their children in hospitals. So they go out on the streets because they have nothing to lose.
Que los pueblos también se cansan.
Soy piquetero, señor.
The Piqueteros, or the unemployed movement, says that they will demonstrate until economic conditions improve in Argentina. 10 years of IMF-mandated structural adjustments and massive privatizations led to an economic catastrophe, creating a new poor of 4 million people, well-organized social movements, and a militant response from security forces during the street protests. Human rights abuses by the Argentina police received international attention earlier this month when the Inter-American Court of Human Rights condemned the state for its dealings with a case of a man who was beaten to death in police custody in 1991. Attorney Maria del Carmen Derdu brought the case to the court.
A diciembre del año pasado, 1,300 casos de personas asesinadas por distintas.
Since last December, 1,300 people have been killed by various sectors of the security forces, on a federal and provincial level, etc. Since 1995, a different kind of repression has been happening in an indiscriminate way, directly against the organized social movements. So the social movement started to manifest against this direct repression that was being carried out with clubs and rubber bullets. In these kinds of demonstrations, we have lost 50 lives.
Que nos ha costado 50 vidas.
Just last month, repression of subway workers demanding a longer workday mobilized 15,000 piqueteros in protest of repression. An unemployed worker at the march says that state repression is influenced by U.S. and IMF policies.
When Kirchner was in the U.S., Bush told Kirchner he needs to resolve the problem of the piqueteros. It is a problem of unemployment. No matter how much propaganda there still is not real solutions. The unemployed remain unemployed. They remain with a 14-hour work week, and this has not been resolved.
Argentine President Néstor Kirchner has repeatedly stated that he wants to put an end to the criminalization of popular movements. Although some activist groups say that repression has died down under Kirchner, one piquetero from Polo Obrero says that the real violence is their economic reality.
Queremos que sepan y le ratificamos que nosotros no somos violentos.
We want them to know that we are not violent. The governments that come and go are implementing violence on us. Violence is not to have work. Violence is not having medicine, not having anything to eat. Receiving a club in the head is not the biggest violent act.
Es más violento la violencia moral.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Pauline Bartolone with Tomás Alayashev in Buenos Aires.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.